Chapter 33. Holden. The room they were using as an anteroom was larger than the Rocinante's galley. Wide tables with built-in monitors and tall metal stools. Soft, indirect lighting in a manipulated spectrum that reminded Holden of early mornings in his childhood. He didn't have a rank or a uniform, but the ship jumpsuit had seemed wrong for the occasion. He'd decided on a dark, collarless shirt and pants that echoed the sense of a military uniform without making any specific claims. Naomi, pacing now along the wall by the yellow double doors, had matched him, but he had the creeping sense that they looked better on her. So, of the three of them, only Bobby was in uniform, and hers had the insignia left off. The cut and the fitting all screamed Martian Marine Corps. And the people they were going to meet with, the ones gathering right now down the hall, knew who she was anyway. "You keep pulling at that sleeve," Bobby said. "It bothering you?" "It? No, it's fine," Holden said. "I'm bothering me. Do you know how many times I've done this kind of diplomatic work? I've been in battles and I've put together video feeds, but to walk in, look down the table at a bunch of OPA operatives and tell them how they all need to listen to me? I've done that exactly no times. Never." "Illis," Naomi said. "You mean when that one guy killed the other guy in the street and then burned a bunch of people alive?" Naomi sighed. "Yeah, then." Bobby flexed her hands, put them palm down on the table display. The monitor glowed for a moment, waiting for a command, then dimmed again when nothing came. Muffled voices came through the doorway. A woman with a belter's accent asking something about chairs. A man replying, his voice too low to make out. "I've been in rooms like this before," Bobby said. "Political work. A lot of different agendas and no one saying out loud what they were actually thinking." "Yeah?" Holden said. "It sucked." The Rocinante had decelerated toward Tycho harder than they'd planned, burning off the speed they'd poured on during the battle and pressing them all down a little more than usual, like an illness or regret. Holden held a little ceremony in the galley, where each of them shared some memory of Fred Johnson, and they let their various griefs blur together. The only ones not to speak were Amos, smiling his amiable and meaningless smile, and Clarissa, her brow furrowed in concentration like it was all a puzzle she was trying to solve. When they broke up, Holden noticed that Alex and Sandra Ipp went off together. But he didn't have time or enough moral high ground to worry about fraternization. Every hour that passed had taken them a few thousand clicks closer to Tycho and the meeting there. All of his spare time was in his cabin with the door closed, trading messages across the emptiness of the system. Michio Pa, drummer on Tycho, a man named Damien Short who'd taken the reins on Ceres, but mostly Christian Avasarala. Every long, heavy day he traded messages with Luna. Long lectures from Avasarala on how to conduct a meeting, how to present himself and his arguments. More importantly, how to listen to what the others said and didn't say. She sent him dossiers on all the major OPA players who would be there. Eme Osman, Micah al-Dujaili, Liang Goodfortune, Carlos Walker. Everything Avasarala knew about them, who their families were, what their factions within the OPA had done and what she only suspected they'd done. The depth of background was overwhelming. Group loyalties intersecting and drawing apart, personal insults affecting political agreements, and political agreements shaping relationships. And along with it, Avasarala pouring the distilled insights of a lifetime of political life into his ears until he was drunk with it to the edge of nausea. "Strength by itself is just bullying. Capitulation by itself is an invitation to get fucked. Only mixed strategies survive. Everything is personal. But they know that too. They can smell pandering like a fart. If you treat them like they're a treasure box, where if you just tweak them the right way, the policy you want falls out, you're already fucked. They'll misjudge you, so be ready to use that. By the time he walked into the meeting room on Tycho, he intended to have a little simplified version of Avasarala that lived in the back of his mind. It felt like doing a decade of work in a few days, because it sort of was. He got to where he couldn't sleep, and he couldn't stay awake. When they finally reached Tycho Station, it was hard to say whether the dread was more powerful or the relief. Walking the habitation ring of Tycho, the first time after their return, had been eerie. Everything was perfectly familiar. The pale foam of the walls, the slightly astringent smell in the air, the sound of Bhangra music leaking from some distant workroom. But it all meant something different now. Tycho was Fred Johnson's house. Only now, it wasn't. Holden kept having the nagging sense that someone was missing, and then remembering who it was. Drummer had done her morning in private. When she escorted them in, she was the head of security that she'd been before, sharp and aware and businesslike. She'd met them at the docks with a convoy of carts, each one with a pair of armed guards. That didn't make Holden feel better. "So, who's in charge here now?" he'd asked as they paused at the bulkhead that marked the administrative section. "Technically, Breeden, Tycho, and the board of directors," she said. "Except they're mostly on Earth or Luna. Never been out here. Always pleased to keep their hands clean. We're here, so until someone comes and makes a strong opposing case, we run it." "We?" Drummer nodded. Her eyes got a little harder, and he couldn't say if it was grief in them or anger. "Johnson wanted me to keep an eye on the place until he got back. That's what I plan to do." There were supposed to be four people waiting for him. There were five. He recognized all the faces that Avasarala had prepared him for. Carlos Walker, wide shoulders and face, even shorter than Clarissa, had an uncanny air of stillness. Emmy Ostman could have passed for a middle-grade science teacher, but was responsible for more attacks against inner-planet military targets than all the rest combined. Liang Goodfortune, who Fred had only managed to lure to the table by offering amnesty for their daughter, a former OPA hitter still housed in a numbers-only prison on Luna. Micah al-Dujaili, with his fat, red-veined drunkard's nose, who'd spent half his lifetime coordinating free schools and medical clinics throughout the belt, whose brother had been captain of the Witch of Endor when the Free Navy destroyed it. The fifth person had the white hair of an old man, pocked cheeks, and a deferential smile that was almost an apology, but not quite. Holden recognized him, but wasn't sure from where. He tried to keep his poker face, but the fifth man saw through the effort without seeming to realize it was there. "Anderson Dawes," the man said. "I don't think we've ever met person to person, but Fred talked about you often, and of course, your reputation." Holden shook hands with the former governor of Ceres Station and master of Marco Inaros's inner circle, his mind racing. "I was wondering if you'd be here," he lied. "I hadn't announced myself," Dawes said. "Tycho's a risky place for a man in my position. I was relying on Fred to vouch for me. We worked together for many years. I was sorry to hear about him." "It's a loss," Holden said. "Fred was a good man. I'll miss him." "As will we all," Dawes said. "I hope you don't mind my arriving unannounced. Emmy reached out to me when she knew she was coming, and I asked her to let me follow along. Good. Great. The more the merrier, Holden thought. But the little version of Avasarala in his imagination frowned. I'm glad you're here, but you can't be in this meeting. I can vouch for him, Emmy Osman said. Holden nodded, trying to imagine what Avasarala would say, but it was the old, almost forgotten voice of Miller that came to him. There's a way we do things. This isn't it. I hope you don't mind waiting outside, Mr. Dawes. Naomi, could you see that our friend here finds someplace comfortable? Naomi stepped forward. Dawes shifted his weight to the back of his feet, surprised. This is your house, Avasarala said in Holden's mind. If they don't respect you here, they won't respect you anywhere. Dawes gathered up his hand terminal and a white ceramic cup, nodding to Holden with a tight smile as he left. Holden took his seat, grateful for the solid and looming presence of Bobby at his side. Emma Osman's lips were pressed thin. If you're looking for mutual respect, you can start by asking before you invite people to my secret meetings. It seemed like a rude thing to say out loud. If you're looking for mutual respect, you can start by asking before you invite people to my secret meetings. Emmy Osman cleared her throat and looked away. All right, Holden said. This was supposed to be Fred Johnson's presentation, but he's gone. I know you all came here on the strength of his word and his reputation, and I know you're all concerned about Marco Enaros and the Free Navy. But I also know this is the first time any of you have met me, and I may not have your full confidence. You're James Holden, Liang Goodfortune said in a tone that meant, of course you don't have our full confidence. I took the liberty of arranging an introduction, he said, shifting the message from his hand terminal to the monitors on the table. Michio Pa looked out at each of them. The command deck of the Connet glowed behind her. Friends, she said, as you know, I was not long ago in the inner circle of the Free Navy, and what I saw there convinced me and many of those in my command that Marco Enaros is not the leader that the Belt needs. As the Free Navy has abandoned its original purpose of supporting and rebuilding the Belt and keeping the industry that feeds Belters from shifting out to the new colony worlds, I have stayed true. You all know this. I have lost friends to this effort. I have risked my life and the lives of those I care most deeply for. I serve with the true heroes of the Belt. My credentials are beyond reproach. Bobby nudged him and nodded toward Micah al-Dujaili. Tears were shining in the man's eyes. Holden nodded. He saw it too. Since my parting of ways with the Free Navy, I have been working with Fred Johnson toward a comprehensive plan that will guarantee the safety and well-being of the Belt. Pa paused, took a deep breath. Holden wondered whether she did that every time she lied, or just when it was a whopper. This meeting was intended to be an introduction of that plan, and of Captain Holden as integral to it. Unfortunately, while Fred Johnson was able to see the path forward, he isn't able to make that journey with us. As a dedicated citizen of the Belt and a servant of our people, I'm asking you to hear Captain Holden out, and then to join with us for a living future. Thank you. Everything about her statement had been negotiated. He'd lost track of the number of times they'd traded back and forth, Pa asking for something, Avasarala explaining what it really meant, him running between the two like a messenger, but learning a little more with every pass. Pa would agree to say they'd been working toward a plan, but not that they'd been working on a plan. She would say that Holden was integral to it, but not that he was central. The whole process had been everything he hated, niggling on details and nuances, fighting over turns of phrase and the order information was presented in, fashioning something that, even where it wasn't outright false, was tailored to be misunderstood. Politics at its most political. He looked at the four faces sitting around the table and tried to judge whether it had worked. Amy Ostman looked thoughtful and sour. Micah al-Dujaili was still composing himself, moved by the reminder that his brother had already sacrificed himself in the cause. Carlos Walker, still and silent and unreadable, as language in an unknown alphabet. Leanne Goodfortune cleared her throat. "Looks like Inaros has a habit of losing women to you, Captain," Goodfortune said. Walker chuckled. "They'll try embarrassing you a little to see how you react. Don't try to one-up them, or they'll try to escalate out of conflicts later. Stay on point." Naomi stepped back in, came to sit at his side. "Losing Fred is hard because it's sad," Holden said. "He was a friend. But it doesn't change the situation. He formed a plan, and my intention is to follow it. Fred called on each of you because he felt you had something to offer this, and also something to gain by it." Carlos Walker's eyes shifted as if he had heard something interesting for the first time. Holden nodded to him, an intentionally ambiguous gesture. Then he turned to Bobby. Her turn to take the floor. "There will be a military aspect to this," she said. "We're not getting through any of this without some risk, but we're confident that it is more than outweighed by the rewards." "You say that as a representative of Mars?" Amy Ostman asked. "Sergeant Draper has worked as a liaison between Earth and Mars on several occasions," Holden said. "She's here today as a member of my crew." That was odd. Bobby seemed to grow tenser at the words, gather herself, sit up straighter. When she spoke again, her tone was almost exactly the same as it had been before. No louder, no rougher. But something about it had grown fierce. "I have experience in combat. I've led teams in battle. It is my professional opinion that the proposal Fred Johnson put together is the best hope for the long-term stability and safety of the Belt." "Find that hard to believe," Amy Ostman said. "Looks to me like the captain here has been getting all the women, and Inaros has been taking all the stations." Before Holden could answer, Micah al-Dujaili snapped back. "Looks to me like Inaros is as bad at keeping territory as he is at keeping women." "Stop it with the women bullshit," Carlos Walker said. His voice was surprising, reedy and musical, a singer's voice. The accents of Belter cant were almost absent from it. "It's juvenile. He lost Dawes, too. He lost everyone in this room before he even began, or none of us would be here. Inaros has an open sore where his heart should be, and we all know it. What I want to hear is how you intend to change the dynamic. Every time you move toward him, he's pulled you into overreach. Your consolidated fleet is going to be stretched too thin soon. Is that what you want us for? Cannon fodder?" "I'm not ready to discuss the details," Holden said. "There are security issues we all have to address first." "Why did you bring us here if it wasn't to tell us what you intended?" Amy Ostman said. Leanne Goodfortune ignored her. "Medina. You're going for Medina." "Something will go wrong. Something always does. They'll see something you didn't mean them to see. They'll have a trap set you didn't know to expect. These are intelligent people, and all of them have their own agendas. When it happens, not if, when, the worst thing you can do is panic. The second worst thing you can do is engage." Holden leaned forward. I'd like to give all of you the opportunity to consult about this before we talk about any of the tactical options, Holden said. I've spoken to the security chief. You are all welcome to stay here on the station, or else return to your ships. Feel free to talk among yourselves or with anyone you think might be useful. You can have access to the station comms unmonitored, or if you'd rather use the systems on your own ships, you won't be recorded or jammed. If you are interested in being involved with this, we'll reconvene here in 20 hours. I'll be ready to go through all the details then, but I will expect your loyalty and commitment in return. If you aren't comfortable with that, you have safe passage away from Tycho any time within that window. And after that? Carlos Walker asked. After that's a different country, Holden said. We'll be doing things differently there. Holden, Naomi, and Bobby all stood. The other four rose a moment later. Holden watched how each of them said their goodbyes, or else didn't. When the doors closed behind the four emissaries, leaving him alone with Naomi and Bobby, he slumped down in his chair. God damn, he said. How does she do this all day, every day? That was maybe 20 minutes start to finish, and I already feel like I should dip my brain in bleach. Told you it sucked, Bobby said, leaning against the table. Are you sure it's a good idea giving them free rein of the station? We don't know who they're talking to. We couldn't stop them, Naomi said. This way, it looks like a gesture on our part. So, theater and palace intrigue, Bobby said. Just for now, Holden said. Just until they buy in. Once they commit, we can get down to our plan. Johnson's plan, Bobby said. Then a moment later. So, just between us, did Fred Johnson really have a plan? I'm pretty sure he did, Holden said, sagging into himself. Don't know what it was. So, this one we're selling? I'm kind of making it up.